理课堂听 class.com
Advanced Studio Classroom is on the air. Advanced, your window on the world, will be talking about how we can solve the problem of mercury in fish today.Welcome, everyone, to our advanced class. We're so happy to have you with us because we're going to talk about a subject that's not happy, but we're happy to be able to talk about it in English. If you can listen to advance and understand everything, congratulate yourself. Give yourself a hand. Yeah, you're in advanced class. And we do try to have programs that will bring up things in the news, things in science,things about your life, and perhaps even literature from time to time. It's a class for everyone, young and old. We're glad to have you with us. And in our class today, we have two of our favorite panelists. We have our younger panelist, Ethan, who's done a lot of research on this mercury problem. How are you today, Ethan?
Oh, I'm great, Doris, and I'm looking forward to sharing a little bit more about what I found on this topic.
I'd like to ask you a question. Did you have tuna fish for breakfast?
No, I did not. I had it for lunch yesterday, though.
How many times a week are you going to eat it now after this article?
Oh, I think I'll wait a couple weeks before my next camp.
Okay. Well, it's been an interesting article. Mm. And the same way with you, Bill. Bill, you're kind of like a fish eater. You like fish, don't you?
Oh, I love fish. And tuna especially. I would eat a salad with tuna on it 2-3 times a week.
Are you cutting back a bit since this article?
After yesterday, I sure am. I'm going to think twice about it now.
Right. Well, anyway, this article is from the U.S. News and World Report, and it's on page 22. We're going to finish page 22 and go to 23 today. And we're talking about the mercury mess. And why are we in such a mercury mess, Bill?
Well, I think what has happened with the growth of industry throughout the world and need for electricity, we've built so many of these coal fire power plants. And the result is there's a lot of pollution that's being put out there in the world, and part of that is mercury.
You know, that word pollution is a very bad word. In fact, we hear it so much, it's almost a frightening word, pollution.
Yes, pollution is anything that is not supposed to be in that area that is there. So garbage on the street is pollution. In the case of water pollution, there are chemicals in the water that aren't supposed to be there.
We have water pollution, air pollution. We even have mind pollution by some of the things we see and we read. Pollution is something that makes us worse, that deteriorates, that makes us sick, doesn't it?
It detracts from the quality of life. It's interesting you say mind pollution because, yes, we're bombarded each day, radio and television, with all kind of noise and stimulation. I think of noise pollution also, Doris. That's something that we don't think of, but in big cities with traffic and aeroplanes, it's rare that we actually have silence.
No wonder people like to go back to a simple life, but that's not too possible anymore. But we do have to realize that there is a problem, that there really is a danger of mercury in fish. What can it do to find that you have too much mercury in fish? What can it do to our bodies?
Well, it can damage the neurological or the nerve parts of our bodies, so we are at higher risk for brain disorders, and this is especially true for young children, so mothers and pregnant mothers need to be really careful how much they consume.
You wouldn't think of drinking a can of paint, certainly. That would create havoc in your body, but as we found yesterday, if you eat this tuna on a regular basis, little by little, that's essentially what you would be doing, is drinking a whole can of a toxic substance and putting it in your body.
And we certainly don't want to put poison in our body if we can help it. Well, and also the mercury in the air, I was surprised to find out it stays there for up to 2 years, and it goes all around the globe. So you can't say you won't get it if you live in a certain part of the world.
Now, the article mentioned 1,000 coal-burning plants in the United States, and that made me think, well, this mercury is wafting around in the air. Much of it's going to be ending up in Europe and Northern Africa.
Well, and I wonder how many coal-burning plants there are in Germany or India or China or any place, right?
Yes, I know that there are still many, many, many coal-burning plants. It's still one of the main sources of power. And I think people are starting to see that maybe we need to start moving on to a cleaner, more environmentally friendly source of power.
Right. We hear a lot about not using too much gasoline because it pollutes and it makes the smog and it pollutes the air. But we don't hear as much about burning coal, but that's really just as bad and maybe even a worse pollutant.
The reason coal is so popular, Doris, as a power source is because it's relatively cheap, and then also the technology used to build these plants is relatively cheap. So that's why all these plants are in place.
But now coal and mercury, how do they get associated with each other? Let's review that a minute.
Well, when you mine coal from the ground, it often comes with a chlorine-based extra chemical alongside, and then when you burn it in your coal plant, that is when the mercury leaves the coal and comes into the air. It evaporates, goes up through the smokestack, and then out into the air, and that's when we get our air pollution.
And then it stays around for a couple of years. And it's not so bad until it goes down and kind of gets down to the water and in the lakes. And then what happens to it?
Then it gets into the food chain, Doris. And it starts first in the plant life, in the algae, which are then consumed by the small fish. And then it goes up the food chain. Bigger fish eat the smaller fish. And eventually we get to the large predators, such as the tuna and the sharks.
And the swordfish, which we like to eat. Because great big pieces of good fish, looks nice, smells good, tastes good, but could be full of mercury. Now, what if you go to buy a tin or can of fish at the supermarket? Can you tell which one has mercury in it or not? Is there any way to tell?
Well, no, you can't. I was doing research, and I found that although not all cans do have high levels of mercury, some may be safe, you can't see inside the can, or even if you could, you wouldn't be able to tell what is high and what is low in mercury.
What if people catch a big fish, like a tuna? Can they tell, like when they catch the fish, whether it's full of mercury or not? Is there any way to tell?
I don't think there's any way. We talked about that yesterday. If I went to the marketplace and asked, I don't think the gentleman who caught the fish would have any idea.
No. So let's find out more about it today. Let's look at page 22 and find if there is a solution. If we have a problem, we like to think of a way to solve it. How can we solve the problem?
How can we solve the problem? Unfortunately, technologies for reducing mercury emissions from power plants have a long way to go. And even the best U.S. controls won't touch the clouds of mercury coming from natural sources and from industry abroad. Controls for other pollutants remove some mercury. But the Energy Department and industry are trying to develop technologies specifically aimed at mercury, such as sorbent injection. This process involves shooting carbon dust into smokestacks. The dust binds to the mercury, forming particles that can be sifted from the exhaust. EPA Chief Mike Leavitt says he is highly optimistic about the method, but believes it will not be widely deployable until 2010 or after. Even the best technologies won't choke off all sources of mercury. While much mercury falls within 100 miles of its source, about one-third of U.S. atmospheric mercury comes from natural sources, such as volcanoes around the world. And an additional 21% drifts over from power plants in Asia. A lot of the mercury in ocean-going fish also hails from sources abroad.
Well, for someone who's trying to solve the problem, the first word in our lesson isn't too good. In line 15, it says, unfortunately. That means it's not so good. Technologies for reducing this mercury going out emission or emitting into the world from power plants, they're not really very good. They have a long way to go. Isn't that right?
It's really a kind of an experimental thing, Doris. I had mentioned during one of our breaks that I had actually owned some stock in a company in the United States maybe 10 or 15 years ago that was formed to try and reduce the emissions and acid rain.
That's right. About 10 years ago, they had all this acid rain publicity. It was killing the fish, like even up in Sweden. The plants in Germany were emitting things, and all the fish were dying up in Sweden and Norway. So they were really investigating this a lot then.
And it was a great idea, and I think we've had several great ideas come along over the years. But unfortunately, nothing has ever really stuck. Nothing has ever really solved the problem.
Well, they have had some kind of controls for other pollutants that remove some of the mercury, but they've been trying to develop something. And so what kind of things have they been trying to develop that are just aimed right at mercury, at this problem? What's the latest on that?
Well, one of them is the sorbent injection, and I didn't even know what this is, so I had to go in and do quite a bit of research before I really understood it.
Would you explain it to us then? What is a sorbent injection? That's found in line 23.
Well, if you go on to line 24 and 25, it talks about the process involves shooting carbon dust into smokestacks. And what they're doing is they're shooting this dust in, and it binds with the mercury that is in the air because the mercury is in a vapor form. And it is an ion, and so it can bind with another molecule. And then that makes it heavier than the air, and it falls back down, and they can clean it out, and it's not any longer going up into the air.
Does it sound like your chemistry class, Chemistry 1 in high school or something?
It sounds maybe a little bit more advanced than what I had studied.
Right. But, you know, it's the idea of these chemicals bonding and so forth, so they kind of stick together. It binds to it. It sticks to it. And then what happens in them, these particles, they can be sifted from this. It's like cleaning the filter on your air conditioner maybe, right?
So originally the mercury particles are too small. You can't just put a sifter over top of it and let everything else go through. They're too small. They just go right through. But once you bind it with this carbon, it becomes a bigger, heavier particle, and it can be filtered out.
I imagine, would that be, for instance, like a filter that might be placed on top of a smokestack at the plant?
Yes.
Okay.
And then it has to be cleaned or changed or something like that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's a good idea. And if the dust binds to this mercury, then they can sift it and so forth. Now, that sounds like a good thing. And the head of the Environmental Protection Agency, EPA chief, Mike Levitt, he says, well, he's pretty optimistic about this. He thinks that's a good project. But he said they won't be able to deploy it or put it to use until about 2010. Wow, think of all the mercury that's going to happen between now and then, 2010.
Well, that's right, and it's going to be even more of a problem. And unfortunately, it's going to still leave the tuna and shark and everything with mercury inside of them.
Yes, and so this is a good solution, and I think people are going to continue to look into it. But we also need to look to other ways to cut down on emissions, we would say, or releasing of harmful chemicals into the air.
Right. I think, you know, like you said, a lot of fish are going to be polluted before that year. That's several years from now.
Well, what this does is it raises awareness. Also, just by reading this article, we learn about these things. And it also maybe can make you think, well, if there's going to be a plant built next to your neighborhood, or maybe the government is proposing something, maybe if we're more aware, we might be able to raise questions and say, hey, is this safe for our environment?
And I think I'm going to keep away from too much canned tuna, too. Well, but even the best technologies won't choke off all sources of mercury. Of course. I mean, they can't really get rid of all of it, right?
Well, yes. On page 22, we talk about that there are natural sources and industry abroad. And so one of the big concerns is that the U.S. and Canada and North America can't control Europe or Asian countries and their emissions, but those emissions do affect the whole world.
Okay. Yes, this is an additional 21% drift over from all the power plants in Asia, and maybe even more than that, because you know, Asia is now becoming more and more industrialized, and they're having more power plants and more industry. And, of course, this pollution goes in the air. Now, at the same time, what's happening to all the beautiful forests and trees that are supposed to drink in this pollution and clean the air? What happened to them?
Well, we did talk about that, how we've been reducing forests such as the Amazon rainforest and also in Malaysia and Indonesia. Many of these forests that would clean up the air naturally are being reduced.
And so that means that there's not enough natural filters. That's what the forests were doing. They were cleaning the air for us. And they were doing something instead of us putting it on these emissions, why they were cleaning it. But we're cutting down too many trees. And so there's the air is getting worse all the time. And it keeps going round and round, getting stronger. So what does it say here about the atmospheric mercury that comes from natural sources?
Well, it says that most of the mercury is going to fall within 100 miles of its source. But over one-third actually comes from natural sources like volcanoes.
Okay, and we're always seeing volcanoes go off, and we think about the volcanic ash that comes from that, but we don't think so much about the mercury, do we?
I had read about Mount St. Helens, the possibility of it erupting again here in the last couple of months, but also reading about when it erupted 20, 25 years ago. I didn't realize how toxic the ash was that was put out by it. There was not only mercury, but also sulfur and magnesium, and it was so toxic. This was stuff that actually could kill people in a very short period of time.
And people probably didn't realize it themselves, but we're always hearing about these volcanoes that are going off all over the world all the time. There's a lot of volcanic mm-hmm. activity.
Well, and there isn't much that we can do to stop this mercury from being released.
No.
And the world originally could handle that amount of mercury emission. The problem is that we humans have come along and added to the source. And so we need to look at ways that we can reduce our human emissions so that the world can regain its balance.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So we're going to find out then that every little bit counts as we finish reading today's article.
Every little bit counts? That's why utilities say they're not entirely to blame. Reducing mercury emissions from U.S. power plants makes very little difference, says Vicki Sullivan, environmental issues manager for Southern Company, which operates 21 coal-burning plants in the South. Not so, says Harvard University atmospheric chemist Daniel Jacob. Mercury hotspots downwind of power plants show that local emissions matter, he says. Reducing emissions from local plants will not eliminate the problem, but if it is a large local source, it will help. With all sides in the mercury debate gearing up for a long dispute, there are sure to be more questions for those fishermen bringing in the catch.
You can imagine, of course, that people that are using coal and coal plants, they say, well, it's not all their fault. And they say reducing mercury emissions from the U.S. power plants makes very little difference. Now, the person who said this has a reason for saying that. Where does she work?
She works for one of the power companies.
Okay. They have 21 coal-burning plants. And in a way, I can see that she has some point. I mean, you could say, okay, there's so much besides mine. You know, what's the difference if I pollute? Everybody else is doing it. But I think everybody has to realize that every little bit counts, don't you think?
It is important, and that is a phrase we will often use, that every little bit counts, or every little thing that we can do to help stop it, or every little bit that is going to contribute to the problem, does matter.
You know, people used to do a lot of littering and throwing little pieces of paper out of their cars, and they say, that little piece of paper doesn't matter. But then the whole countryside is littered, and there's a lot of strict laws in the United States about doing that now. People think their little bit, I'm going to just do this little bit of damage. But there's so many people, if they all do just a little bit, it really makes a big mess to clean up.
Right. I think about if I even recycle maybe each day one or two plastic or glass bottles, what is that, one or two? But if you multiply it by maybe how many millions of people live in this city or country, then all of a sudden we're talking about a pretty substantial amount.
That's right. So our every little bit counts, and 21 coal-burning plants might make some difference, right?
I found that quote, the thing I underlined was very little difference. And I put a question mark to that next to that because I thought, okay, very little difference. What does that mean? 5%, 10%, 15%? I think even a little difference would be helpful.
Well, you know, I thought probably a lot of the pollution, we know there are a lot of factories and all in Asia, and because they're just beginning to get into that. That might be the worst. But I thought that, you know, maybe that we didn't have as much in America. But in this research and this article about mercury, I found out that one of the highest concentrations of mercury in the fresh water, the sediment, the part of the water that was ever documented in the whole world was from New Jersey, United States.
I remember growing up back in the 70s and reading about this, Doris. New Jersey is a heavily industrialized state, and there were very few regulations back then. The issue was not being addressed, and what you had was tons of chemicals just being dumped in the water without any regulation.
Right, and, you know, they found out a lot of different things, like burning trash, like melting old cars that contain mercury in the light switches. Even burning those old cars would do it. And I think all the thermometers used to have mercury in them, one to be out to find out how hot or cold it is. Mm-hmm. And they used to always put mercury in those. Why don't they do that anymore?
Well, the problem was that people would throw it out if it got broken. Is one reason they would do is that it would break and then they would throw it out and they'd take it to the incinerator and burn it, and then that mercury is released into the air.
Hmm. A good example of another material that used to be tossed out indiscriminately, another word there, is batteries. And I think of just batteries you use in flashlights or even car batteries. Years ago, people would just take these batteries and throw them in the trash.
Right. Now, what are you supposed to do with batteries now? You know, we use a lot of batteries. We use them in our flashlights. We use them in all kinds of equipment these days. So what are you supposed to do when they're used up?
We actually have ways of recycling them. And a lot of times, maybe where you work or in your community, there will be places to take your used up batteries for recycling.
But what do they do with them then? Do you know?
I believe they...
They don't put them in the water.
No, there's a way of getting rid of them. I'm not exactly sure. There might be a way of burning them that is actually safe. Now, we're talking about coal burning and things. That might be a whole different subject, the burning of used batteries. But I believe there is a safe way of removing them.
Because there's millions of batteries that are used up all the time, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the fact is that they say that it does make a difference. This Harvard University atmospheric chemist, imagine we have some chemists who study atmospheric pollution, Daniel Jacob, what did he say?
He says, Vicki Sullivan said, is not so. It is not true. Mercury hotspots, or places where mercury is very concentrated, downwind of power plants, show that local additions do matter.
Okay. Of course, we cannot say it doesn't matter. This much doesn't matter. He does say that reducing these emissions or this going out of the chemicals from local plants will not eliminate. It means it will not completely get rid of. To eliminate means to get rid of completely. But it will help a lot locally. So even though it won't get rid of it, it does its part, doesn't it?
Any little bit is helpful.
And if we look back up at line 4, it talks about that all of the mercury, most of it, falls within 100 miles of where it is produced. And so for this area of the United States, also in New Jersey where it is so concentrated, it is a big issue because most of it is going to fall within that area.
I know if I lived around a plant, particularly downwind, I'd appreciate it at least if they made a little bit of an effort to try and clean this up rather than saying, well, we can't make a difference.
I just decided to cross New Jersey off my list. But with all the sides in the mercury debating about gearing up for this long dispute, there's sure to be more and more questions for those fishermen bringing in the catch. How can you gear up for a long dispute?
When you gear up, it means you're preparing, you're getting your information, or you're getting the tools that you will use. I may say that I am going to gear up for my hike, and that means that I'm going to get all of the equipment that I need, the ropes or whatever it is, or gearing up for the debate, I'm getting all the information I need so that I can argue well.
Your gear is usually your equipment. So to gear up means to get your equipment ready. And in this case, it could be your information. You're gearing up with your information. So we need to read up on this and be up to date on it. And the fishermen, they're bringing in the fish, but that's all they do. They bring in their catch. That means the fish that they caught, that amount of fish, they call it their catch. They brought it in, but looking at it, you don't know, mercury or no mercury, so don't eat too much of it.
Right, and there's no way that they can be able to tell. They're fishermen, and that's their job, is to catch the fish. I wanted to mention, Doris, the box on page 23 there, how mercury gets into fish. I found that fascinating. I think that's a great example, and it's very educational for everyone to understand on a basic level how this occurs.
Right. I hope you all have the magazine, because we're trying to put more graphs and more graphics and illustrations to help you understand it better. But I was thinking of just one thing. You know, they say when you cook meat, it's safer. When you boil eggs more, they're better. You don't have salmonella. What if you just cook this fish a little bit longer or clean it better? Will that reduce the mercury contamination?
Unfortunately, no. It's one of the few foods and chemicals that we cannot cook out of a food.
Which is too bad. So even if you cook it a long time, you're not going to get rid of the mercury, right?
Right. You talked about boiling water or maybe cooking meat long enough, having it reach a certain temperature, but in this case, the mercury stays.
Well, and the problem is that to get mercury to the point where it would evaporate or leave the meat, you would have to get your meat over several thousand degrees. And while that is attainable in a coal-burning plant, it's not attainable in your oven.
I don't think it would be very tasty either.
No, it probably wouldn't have any other food value in it, so why bother, you know? Okay. All right, so check it out and see if you can find out more about it. This is the most recent news that we could find, and be very careful because it does have its side effects. And it could have for your children or for you. And we certainly need all the help we can get with our thinking and our brains and on our nerves. We don't want to contaminate them. So probably go a little easy on the big fish.
Yes. I know I'm going to cut back on how much tuna I take in.
And I've told my friends to watch out, because I personally don't, but I know people who do.
Right. And so read up and find out more in our advanced class. We try to have interesting subjects, informative subjects. And as you study them, we hope that it will improve your English, but also improve your life as you continue to learn together with us. Thanks for being with us today, everyone. And we'll be back with a new topic again tomorrow. Goodbye.
Goodbye. Goodbye.